For more than a year, the deadly unrest in Syria has brought about more questions than answers. But what's definitely clear is that civilians have been the main victims of what the armed opposition says is a government crackdown, and the government says is a foreign-backed attempt to destroy the country. This is News Analysis.
Clashes between anti-government armed groups and the army continue in around the city of Aleppo, Syria's largest city and economic center. The armed groups in Aleppo are said to be receiving vast supplies of arms from Turkey, which lies not a long distance from the suburbs of the city. Damascus has frequently criticized Turkey, alongside Saudi Arabia and Qatar, over its role in the unrest that has plagued Syria for months now. A lawmaker representing Hatay province at the Turkish parliament has accused Ankara of granting American and Israeli intelligence agents a free passage through the area. Lefrik Yılmaz said that local people are getting agitated over the presence of thousands of unidentified men across the region. Earlier, Qatari sources said Turkey, along with Saudi Arabia and Qatar, has set up bases on Turkish soil to let anti-Syrian armed groups and al-Qaeda operatives sneak into Syria with arms supplies. Meanwhile, Syrian officials have also been complaining about what they call meddling remarks by Turkey. Turkish officials, including Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, have openly called for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to step down. On one occasion, Davutoğlu even claimed that his country will decide the future of Syria. Turkey has also made some provocative moves. It's just beefed up its troops along the Syrian border, sending tanks, artillery, and missiles into the areas. Syrian officials complain that all this, quote, enmity comes not long after a time when Turkey was a close ally of Syria. Turkey has said its foreign policy is based on zero troubles with neighboring nations. But there's been an about-face in Ankara's policy towards Syria, and Turkey is now being called a tool for U.S. policy in the region.
Well, joining me now live from Washington is Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian. Also from London, Charles Shoebridge, security analyst, and in Beirut, Franklin Lam, international lawyer. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining News Analysis. My first question to our guest in London, if I may, Charles Shoebridge, looking at the role of Turkey. Now, this program specifically is taking a look at what role Ankara has been playing in Syria. Before we move on to the broader aspects of the conflict there, let's discuss the question of Turkey becoming the main stronghold now of foreign forces against President Assad. Would you go as far as saying that?
I think the fact is that if you've got a situation where many of the refugees have formed camps along the Turkish border, it's inevitable that amongst those, or those camps are going to be used as a haven, if you like, for the armed opposition's organization, not purely as, if you like, humanitarian areas. Now, Turkey has, of course, provided a lot of support for those refugees from the fighting, and they are also, of course, it's well known, it's been publicized by various media, in fact, not really hidden by Turkey itself, that, of course, within those camps, within those areas, naturally, you therefore also have the organization of the armed opposition, and amongst the armed opposition, you are also going to have elements of what would certainly in the West be called extremist or even al-Qaeda operatives. And so therefore, I think if you look at even the geography of the place, let alone the politics, if you look at the nexus within Turkey of the Syrian rebel fighters being largely based there, if you look at, for example, the West seas of access to the Syria via Turkey, for example, the CIA, of course, interconnecting with Turkish agents in what is, after all, a NATO power, then, of course, you will see why Turkey has become so crucial to the not only the rebel supplies, but also their political and military organization.
Now, Dr. Tarpley, let's bring you on this as well. Looking at Turkey's role, I'll just bring you a quote here now from Turkey's Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu. I'm quoting here. He says, we will not allow the formation of a terrorist structuring near our border, no matter if it is al-Qaeda or PKK. Now, that was when he was speaking about the threat from the Kurdish rebels. But is Turkey now practically hosting and assisting al-Qaeda when it comes to the fight against Syria? Because, as So I guess then London was also saying that Al-Qaeda is also now getting involved in that fight.
Well, Al-Qaeda has been an integral part of this from the very beginning, and they've been there because they've been brought in by NATO. Think of Al-Qaeda as the NATO irregular infantry, a guerrilla force, if you will, that works for NATO. And this structure is already existing on Turkish territory. Just some examples. The New York Times tells us that the CIA is present in southern Turkey as a traffic cop to direct weapons flows paid for by Saudi Arabia and the other feudal monarchies of the Gulf to direct those weapons towards certain groups inside Syria. We had reports previously of a large airlift and sea lift of terrorists, I would say, from Libya, the people who overthrew Gaddafi, who had been shipped into Libya by NATO. They were then shipped into southern Turkey. Iskenderun is the place that was mentioned, and then they were moved into northern Syria. We even had examples of guests in tourist hotels along the Turkish Mediterranean coast complaining that Al-Qaeda terrorists had moved into the same hotel and were showing the Al-Qaeda flag. And then most recently, the Reuters dispatch that shows in connection with the Incirlik NATO Air Force Base, U.S. Air Force Base, that there's a kind of a logistical hub there, which is in a place called Adana, which is directing these weapons flows. So it's too late to make these statements. I think you have to look, though, behind this. Turkey has obviously been conned. They've been manipulated. The ambition and the vanity of Erdogan and Davutoglu, it seems to me, has been played on systematically by Obama. The word here in Washington for the last year or so has been that Obama's favorite telephone partner, the person in the world that he calls more than any other, is Erdogan. And he's promising to make Erdogan great. He's saying, play my game, and you will become the dominant satrap of the U.S. empire in the Middle East. And I'm sure Erdogan is also getting assurances from Saudi Arabia. Become the base for the attack on Syria, and you will reap all kinds of benefits. And of course, he's not reaping benefits. He's putting his country at tremendous risk.
Right. And on that note that you just made there, I'd like to refer to a statement in the media about Turkey. In the next question to Franklin Lam in Beirut. Mr. Lam, one media statement was saying Ankara has become a champion of the uprising against Assad's Syrian regime because it's given refuge to a large number of army defectors, civilian refugees. Now, is that a part of what Turkey is trying to achieve, giving itself that image by the role that it's playing in Syria? And do you think that despite this, Turkey, the stance that Turkey has took on Syria is backfiring when it comes, for instance, to its relations with Iraq, when it comes to its relations with the Kurds?
Well, first, Ramadan Kareem, I can barely hear your question. But maybe I have the gist of it, having to do with the role that Turkey is playing. And I think it's apparent that it's taking this opportunity to settle some scores with the PPK and the Kurdish rebels, but also to return to a position where Turkey was dominant in the region. And I think it sees perhaps this opportunity, and it's taking it, and I believe that's what we're witnessing. I do not think that they're going to cross the border. These threats, goodness, they've got, 80 generals in prison for other problems in the Turkish military. I don't see them having the organization right now and the power to actually move demonstrably into Syria, which I believe would be a major mistake if they did. But I think they're taking every opportunity, and we're in the West who are supporting these kind of machinations are giving them ample opportunities to, you know, to benefit and to try to restore a previous power base that Turkey's Turkey, of course, had in the early last century.
Right. Back to London now, Mr. Shoebridge. I guess earlier on in Washington, referring to the ties now between Turkey and the United States, how important those ties have now become. We had in the latest reports the Turkish lawmaker saying that Turkey's Hatay province, which is on the Mediterranean coast, is now, in his words, in the hands of American and Israeli agents. Now, in your view, how much of its authority has Turkey actually given away on this issue, Mr. Shoebridge?
I think obviously all countries are beholden to their political ties. We need to consider not just the regional but also the global level of Turkey's interactions with its allies. The United States is clearly one of its most important, if not its most important ally, and naturally therefore you would imagine that it will, if you like, align itself with America's policy in the region, particularly in respect to its neighbour Syria, and now it has done that. In fact, of course, Turkey is going beyond what the United States is actually, on the surface at least, publicly doing, in that it is actually channeling arms and equipment directly to the rebels as opposed to through intermediaries. There's also an issue in relation to the EU. Don't forget that not only is Turkey a member of NATO, it is also seeking EU membership. The EU is also supporting, albeit not with weapons, but it is supporting politically the rebels on the ground and outside Syria. And therefore, again, we can expect Turkey to do this. But I would say that also, I think in many ways, Erdogan has looked at a situation that is possibly imploding within Syria because of the nature of the backing for rebels from Saudi Arabia and other places. And it may well be that Erdogan is actually just positioning, as indeed your last speaker said, positioning Turkey for a possible implosion of Syria in the future to its best advantage, particularly vis-a-vis the Kurdish population, of course, in Syria itself.
Right, and back to Washington. Mr. Tarpley, would you say that Turkey is not seriously considering any kind of military intervention in Syria? We know, of course, that there's been a lot of news of its deploying missiles, troops, armoured vehicles along the border. What is it preparing for through these deployments?
Well, most observers would have regarded the current state of Turkish policy as impossible, right? If people had been told 2 or 3 years ago that Turkey would abandon the zero problems foreign policy, good neighbor policy, and now engage in flagrant intervention and interference in the internal affairs of Syria for the purpose of stoking a civil war on their own doorstep, that would have been considered crazy. So I don't know what the limit is. This is something that is inherent in hubris and megalomania. The idea that you're going to become a regional hegemon seems to be the idea. I would also say that they're disregarding the lessons of history. If you look back to Ataturk at the end of the First World War, Ataturk's basic idea was valid. And he said, we cannot survive here as the Ottoman Empire. We can, however, survive as a Turkish national state in the Anatolian Peninsula, and in that form, we can thrive. We can do very well. And Turkey was doing very well in terms of development and progress until these current troubles began. I had a chance to talk to General Aoun, Michel Aoun of Lebanon, who last November in his little fortress above the Mediterranean said, Turkey is the last country that should become involved in these adventures because they're split. They've got secularists and Islamists. They've got a Kurdish minority, and by meddling in this way, they're getting themselves into big trouble. Now, let's look at this PKK. Erdogan has brought this up. Erdogan is complaining. He says the PKK has taken over certain parts of northern Syria, and they're going to operate into Turkey, and he wants the right of hot pursuit back into Syria. Well, Erdogan, you should have thought of that, right? The great principle of international relations is reciprocity. If you foment troubles in Syria, then you're going to sow the wind and reap the whirlwind when that comes back to haunt you. And the hot pursuit doctrine would work both ways. But by doing this, Erdogan has really created his own greatest nightmare, which is a general uprising of the Kurds, which I think under these circumstances would certainly have tragic aspects for for many people in the region.
Right, let's have Mr. Lam's view on this as well, the type of action that Turkey is planning to take. Now, Mr. Lam, the White House has given a statement saying that Turkey and Washington are coordinating their efforts to accelerate a political transition in Syria. Now, what are those efforts, do you think, how far is Turkey willing to go?
Well, I agree with the comment made earlier that I think the Americans will go as far as they think necessary to achieve not just regime change, but to really squeeze the next domino, in a sense, Iran in this situation. I don't think Obama will go as far as American forces en masse on the ground, but we cannot even rule that out. Our guest said something about the doctrine of a hot pursuit, which I don't think is applicable here. That in international law, you know, the Israelis try to use that. But that is only applicable if you see that agents in this case, Syria crossing the border, but not some group that the government would not argue it had, you know, absolute control over. But I just don't know how far the Americans are prepared to go, but they are certainly seeing this opportunity, and it may be a, quote, breakthrough for them in the American plan, in this sense, that that 530-mile border is giving more and more opportunity to bring arms and agents and fighters and material and support equipment into Syria to confront the regime, you know, from behind the scene, quote, unquote. And I think that's, I think that in a sense is a golden opportunity, that border for the Americans to apply with their allies enormous pressure and try to tip this balance. There's these reports that are not verified that, you know, the Israelis are in Aleppo. They may be. And how Aleppo goes is going to be enormously important. I would stop short of saying that Aleppo is Benghazi. There's too many differences with the support of the, you know, from the outside, the inside, and all that. But it's enormously important, and it looks like this battle is going to continue. And I think the Americans may take the opportunity to beef up the forces and try to get a victory in Aleppo for the so-called opposition.
Right. So, Mr. Shoebridge, would you agree then that what Turkey decides when it comes to Syria is what the United States has decided beforehand, that it is taking its guidelines from the United States?
Yes, I think they're working together. Like I say, they're both members of NATO. They are extremely close in terms of their military structures and also politically, of course. Really, it seems to me almost inconceivable that Turkey would act, certainly overtly, without at least the approval of the United States, and one might expect that given their closeness. To go back to what your previous speaker was saying, I would imagine that it's extremely unlikely that we will see direct American presence, boots on the ground, or even any military intervention in Syria. The reason I say that is because, first of all, American public opinion, especially in an election year, is now opposed to wars we've seen in Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on. But secondly, I think there's increasing awareness amongst aspects of the media. We've seen articles recently in Der Spiegel, in New York Times, and in other places that is revealing slowly but surely to the American and Western public that they cannot take it for granted that because people are opposed to a dictator, Assad, in Syria, that those people are democracy seeking themselves.
Right.
So
well, I'll just stop you here if I may, Mr. Shoebridge.
That they should not support such people.
Yeah, sorry for jumping in here. We're running out of time. I'd just like to give the last comments to all three of you as your concluding remark. Then we'll start with you, Mr. Shoebridge. I'll just refer to a letter that's been sent by Syria to the United Nations. And in that letter, Syria has said that armed groups are attacking civilians, they're assaulting people in residential areas. The thing is, we've got Turkey, Saudi Arabia, or whatever, giving assistance or giving free passageway to these militants. But who is actually responsible for what actually these militants are doing on the ground?
The fact is that the militants have no rigid control structure. That you say who is responsible. The fact is that there is no responsibility. And really, I read an article recently where it was said that what you've got is a situation where Syria is on fire and foreign powers are turning up not with fire extinguishers, but with flamethrowers or with petrol cans. Turkey is taking a role supported by the United States and encouraged by it to supply weapons to a situation where civilians are dying in large numbers. When you have opposition rebels taking up positions in cities, you will expect armies to respond as they have their
right.
As indeed,
we're running
as
out of time. I'll stop you there, Mr. Shoebridge. Thank you very much. Back to Washington now, Mr. Tarpley. If you could quickly also tell us, would you say there is a connection between the sudden surge in violence, as Syria says, with, for instance, Kofi Annan's visit and any effort for a peaceful resolution or a political resolution to the crisis?
Well, we've had two waves of foreign fighters being brought in. One wave was brought in during this past winter into the spring, and that's what has been active over these past months. And then more recently for July, for Operation Damascus Volcano, which was the attempt to crash the Syrian state, as Hillary Clinton said, the catastrophic assault, they brought in another wave of foreign fighters from all over North Africa and the Mediterranean and the Middle East. Now, Turkey claims that they sealed their border. They didn't. It would be good if they did, but they're still allowing illegal border crossings to function. My advice to Turkey would be pull back from this while you still can. Seal your border. If Turkey right. cut off access to foreign fighters, if they just said, we'll take refugees but not allow weapon shipments to go in, the rebellion in northern Syria would die down in short order.
Right, and I'll stop
Turkey
you there,
says
Mr.
they
Tarpley,
want to join
I'm
the
really
Shanghai
sorry.
Cooperation Organization. They'll
we're
never
really
get in the SCO at this rate.
Yeah, back to Franklin Lam. Just quickly, Mr. Lam, in under a minute, who would you say is responsible for rejecting or blocking a political resolution of the situation in Syria?
Again, I only got a little bit, but if it's who is responsible for blocking it, well, I think certainly both sides. Both sides have pledged to support the six-point Annan plan, for example. They say they want it. Everybody says they want it. But neither side has taken the first step to have a ceasefire. So I think the blame is to be shared there. But I would say the momentum and the increasing involvement is coming from the opponents of the Assad regime, the international opponents. They're finally getting organized and opening up the spigots and the pathway. So I think they're probably the primary. They don't want an end to this without regime change,
Lam, thank you very much. International lawyer joining us there live from Beirut. A big thank you as well to Charles Shoebridge, security analyst with us from London, and Dr. Webster Griffin, Tarpley, author and historian with us from Washington.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi. It's goodbye.